Hey there, everyone, and thanks again for joining us for an episode of 2 for 1 at the Movies on whatsupwestman.ca. Tonight, Stephen Jackson and I take a look at the movie The Dark Knight Rises. Now, this movie has absolutely been tearing up the box office over the last couple of weeks, and we get into a bit of a punch-counter-punch, I guess you could say, between The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, and which one actually ends up being the better movie in the trilogy. So we've got that and a whole bunch more right up after the break on 2 for 1 at the Movies on whatsupwestman.ca.
As you were to your own mother and father. I swore to them that I would protect you, and I haven't.
The mayor's gonna dump him in the spring.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But he's a hero.
A war hero. This is peacetime.
You think this can last? There's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne. Friends better batten down the hatches. Because when it hits, you're all gonna wonder how you ever thought you could live so large and leave so little for the rest of us.
What does that mean?
Rise.
Gotham is ashes. You have my permission to die.
Okay, so as I mentioned in the intro, joined by my good friend Stephen Jackson, I'm Sean Cameron, and we are talking about the movie The Dark Knight Rises, third in the Batman, the latest, I guess, incarnation of the Batman series, and by all rights, probably the last one in this sort of tangent on the Batman lore, I guess you could say. First of all, welcome, Stephen.
Well, thank you for having me again. Yeah, no, this is definitely one movie I was looking forward to, and definitely looking forward to talking about this one.
Yeah, it should be exciting, and on Facebook and Twitter and through text messages, Stephen and I have been kind of sparring about this movie all week and trying to find a place for it in movie lore, and had some differing opinions, and I think, you know, I'll probably end up getting convinced by Stephen that it is a good movie, because he's a master convincer, I guess you could say, in that sense. He can plead his case far better than I can when it comes to movies, but I'm looking forward to it anyways. I'm up for the challenge. You know, I've been eating well. I've been exercising the last couple days in preparation for it.
Just like Bruce Wayne.
Just so you know, in case I had to make that climb that broke everyone else's back, I would be able to do it and recover in a short amount of time. So, you know, I'm ready to go. Let's throw it out there and start it off. Stephen, if you can give anybody who hasn't seen this movie a little bit about what the Dark Knight Rises is all about.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to hold off any jokes because, yeah, if you said that, I thought of a joke and I thought, oh, I'm not Dane Cook. So,
no,
you know,
doubt.
No, we don't do that here. So The Dark Knight Rises. So I had to bring up a little bit because I made sure I got the timing right. But it's 8 years after the last movie. Batman is kind of disappeared from the city. He's been branded kind of the bad person because everyone blames him for the death of Harvey Dent from the second movie.
Right.
And so he has disappeared, but now all of a sudden this new threat has emerged into the city. His name is Bane. He's an awesome villain. And we're going to get the comic book stuff soon. And he's taken over the city. Batman thinks he can take him on, realizes he's just a little bit out of practice, and gets broken, literally. And then there's the inevitable have to climb back or rise, as it were, to come back to take back Gotham City. So that's pretty much a rundown of the show. There's obviously a lot of characters in this, so...
Third part in the trilogy, obviously. Funny enough, trilogies have three movies in them. So third part in the trilogy. Do you think it's the last one?
Yeah, I'm very sure it's the last one. Christopher Nolan has like said on repeated occasion that this is it. Now that said, will someone else try and take up the reign?
Right.
And that's always possible. I mean, I've been hearing the little rumblings about Catwoman the movie. Anne Hathaway has definitely expressed interest, but she's also expressed interest with Christopher Nolan involved. Christopher Nolan is also very much involved in the next Superman movie too, as next Superman movie as producer. So,
oh, he's the producer of Man of Steel.
Oh yes, and if you go see this movie, watch the trailer at the beginning because you do see the Man of Steel trailer at the very beginning. Right. So, and if you go online, you can even see both trailers, which
that was very cool. That step,
the different dads speaking about Clark's role in the world. Yeah, I know. I just got goosebumps when I saw that, and I was like, oh my god. Yeah. So yes, you know, when DC actually gets a comic book movie right, it's good. So
yeah, and just to and we'll do this podcast as if the people have seen the movie. Just because there is going to be some potential for spoilers, and otherwise we can't discuss kind of.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I could talk about this movie without spoiling it. It's really hard to.
The big opener at the end, obviously. But with the Superman movie, you know, Man of Steel, you're looking at both Kevin Costner voicing one trailer, and this was very cool. Kevin Costner voicing the trailer, and then Russell Crowe voicing the trailer as Superman's father, you know, and
Kevin Costner. Opposites of dads. Like, can you imagine having Russell Crowe and Kevin Costner as your dad? That's pretty cool. You think about it, you know, you got like Waterworld and you got Gladiator.
Yeah. He's obviously going to be telling that to a counselor someday, you know, my two dads type thing. Could you imagine a sitcom, my two dads with Kevin Costner and Russell Crowe as the fathers?
Yeah. Hey, it's my alien dad. Hey, it's my human dad, you know.
So, Batman.
Batman.
I'm going to throw it right out there off the start. Okay. Why is this the best of the three movies?
Why is this the best one? Okay, well, first of all, he ties wonderfully the first two movies into the third movie. He does it in such a great way that's not obtrusive. That doesn't mean you have to see the first two to get this one. But it definitely works that way. The other thing I like about it is that, and this is one of my fears about this movie, was that the characters there'd be too many characters to follow, and that they wouldn't get enough time, and that is not the case in this movie. Oh. And the other thing about this movie that is just amazing is that I find with the acting in this one is that they get all the characters seem to get a weighty part in this story. I know we're gonna debate at some point about number two, and that's gonna be part of my main argument. But the other thing I like about the movie too is that it's such a smart script. There's so many neat little twists and turns in this, and the biggest thing as a comic person, this movie psyched me out. It absolutely psyched me out on one of the characters that we'll get to at some point, and I felt like I did this horrible sound in the theater. I'm sure I made one. Darn it! I should have got that. And that's, I think, why this movie deserves it. I think also, you know, again, it's a long movie, but it doesn't feel like a long movie. And there are some great moments in this movie. It was one of those ones where I just felt so engaged from beginning to end. I was worried about the violence in the movie, and it didn't affect me nearly as much as I thought it would. And yeah, I think overall this movie was just such a well balanced movie.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Absolutely. And you know, a lot of those points I can agree with. You know, I went to The Dark Knight Rises, obviously. I enjoyed the movie. I did enjoy the movie. I will give you that. My feeling was, though, and this is the basis in my argument, and it's the same argument I have when people talk about Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back or, you know, Last Crusade versus Raiders of the Lost Ark. Batman had to overcome itself. It had to overcome the second movie, in which I felt The Dark Knight, the 2008 The Dark Knight, was by all accounts, to me, it felt like it was a masterpiece of a movie. And I think that was the one place that The Dark Knight Rises as a standalone movie is phenomenal. But that was the one place that worried me with it, and I don't know whether they got there or not. And like I say, from the sounds of it, you believe they did. I don't know whether they got there or not to trump that second movie, or whether they really needed to.
Well, you know, it's fascinating you say that, because, you know, I remember when I left The Dark Knight, the second movie, I remember myself going, wow, Heath Ledger was great. But I got to tell you, I really felt lots of the story just got muddled. And I know that sounds bad to say. I mean, because I like The Dark Knight, don't get me wrong. But I felt like with this movie that everyone was on equal ground. Like, I actually, Christian Bale, for instance, who I really loved in this third movie, I felt he just was so overwhelmed in the second movie by Heath Ledger's performance that you couldn't do anything. Harvey Dent, I love Harvey Dent. I love the character of Two-Face. Again, a character just got somehow muddled in that second movie. And this is one of the things I find myself, I will go back and watch the first movie because I really like the first movie. And I know I'll go back and watch this one again, but I rarely go back to go back and watch The Dark Knight. It's a movie that I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to kind of describe that chaos that is Joker, but it just was too much a little chaos for me. It just didn't quite gel for me.
Right, and definitely I can see your point with the Harvey Dent character. I think the treatment that Nolan and the script gave to Harvey Dent's character and the possibilities, as well right up to the makeup of Harvey Dent in the second film, was all wrong. To me, that was one place that they missed with The Dark Knight, was the Harvey Dent character. I didn't like the treatment they gave, especially after he became Two-Face. It was such a footnote in that movie that
it's kind of like watching the third Spider-Man movie with the character of Sandman. And
right.
I like Thomas Hayden Church and what he did with the character, but he didn't have anything to really do with the character, unfortunately, and I felt it was almost a wasted character.
Do you think it was right in being a 3-hour movie?
This third Batman movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know something? It was one of those movies where it just I think in other movies like you know, the Lord of the Rings, which Christopher Nolan said he modeled this one after. I just felt this one just was. I didn't feel like it was 3 hours. Like, I mean, I did feel it was a little long at some points, but I couldn't disagree with it because I was entertained and I knew that there are parts of the story that had to be told in order to get there. And I felt like this movie really got to all the points that I had to say. So,
The one thing that I will give Dark Knight Rises versus either of the first two was the, you know, and this is terrible because it, you know, it as well deals with The Dark Knight Rises and all the problems, you know, and the shooting in Colorado and that type of thing. But all that aside, you know, not trying to minimize that in any sense, but The Dark Knight Rises going into it, there was a point in that movie that it gave me a real feeling of hopelessness. And in watching it, and especially when Bane takes over the city, and I can remember this spot in the movie as like a definitive point where I was sitting there, and they show Bruce Wayne in the cell, and they go back to Gotham and it's winter time.
Yeah.
And Bane's kind of minions have taken over the city, and he's, you know, he's already done his thing with the atomic bomb in the football stadium and that type of thing. But it gave me such a feeling of hopelessness that, and they did very well in that sense, where I thought for a few minutes there, I'm sitting in the theater and I'm like, my God,
this is where it ends.
This is where it ends, right?
Yeah.
And it threw me for a loop. And I know you mentioned that a character threw you for a loop, and I have a good idea who you're talking about. But I did, and that was the first time in the whole trilogy, and I will say that for The Dark Knight, is that didn't have that moment. But Dark Knight Rises did have that moment where I felt like, oh my God, they're going to kill Batman, right? This mm-hmm. is how it ends, is, you know, not knowing the comic book lore as much about it, but I'm like, this is how it ends. They're, Bane's taken over this city, and it's chaos.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that was really remarkable about this film, and it's something that they really grasp when they get to the comic books. Like, we know the comic books are about Batman, Bruce Wayne, but over the years we've learned to discover this amazing love of other characters, like the Alfred character, who, you know, he has very few scenes in this movie, but his scenes are so pivotal to make this work. The other person who, and I know you believe this as well too, is such an underrated actor, and that's Gary Oldman.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I cannot imagine now another actor playing Commissioner Gordon like him.
Yeah.
Seemed to just grasp this. And what's great about this movie is that it's so pivotal that all these characters come together despite their differences, their connections to everyone else, their allies. Despite all that, they do all come together, and they're all so pivotal. And the other character who I, you know, is the Officer Blake by Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
I was worried that his character was going to get lost too. And his character becomes almost so much more pivotal than you can imagine as the movie goes on.
Yeah. And obviously has a tie to future Batman franchise relaunches.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another one that threw me for a twist, because I wasn't sure which way they were going to go with that.
Right.
I wasn't sure. I thought maybe Batman Beyond, but then they went back. But that's okay. Even the comic books, okay. But again, another character. You know, and you mentioned how you felt that hopelessness.
Yeah.
But if you can think about it, his character was that one character who made you think there is some hope.
For sure. Yeah.
Let's say Batman. It was actually him, and it was these characters coming together that ultimately just bring more hope and more hope and more hope as the movie goes on. I that's one of the great things about this movie. Yeah, there's some great visuals in this movie too.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to that just for a second with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, and obviously, you know, major spoiler, but people have seen the movie. You know, he basically has the offer of becoming Robin in the movie. There, you know, we said it right.
Yeah.
It's
out there. I don't think we've said it. Okay,
but you're totally right. It has the he is the one strand of hope in that movie.
And you really think about it, if you go back to the comic books again, and this is one of the reasons why they introduced Robin. This is just for the same reason. Like back in the 30s, and I think Robin was introduced in 1940. Yes, I know this. That's the reason why he was introduced, because they saw Batman and they saw him as a character who could get very dark and very grim, and Robin was introduced just to lighten it just a little bit.
Right.
And again, when they had killed the Robin off in the late 80s, early 90s, that was the Jason Todd Robin, right. When they killed him off, again, they reintroduced, again, Batman went very dark, very grim, very fast. Because it was very hard to make any story with Batman very light, and then you added Robin again. So I've always seen Robin as that character who, that youthful innocence, that little bit of hope, and I think that's what makes what Joseph Gordon-Levitt really caught on to in this film. Like even when his hope was starting to die, he right. never lost it. Like the bus thing on the bridge.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a very pivotal scene for his character. You know, even when he feels the hope is lost, he's like, get the kids back on the bus.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need to see this happen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about some of those secondary characters, I guess you could say, in the movie. So all Batman aside, but let's, you know, dive right into the villains.
Okay.
Bane.
Okay, this is the one thing I will probably say it was a little bit of a factor that kind of hurt this movie a little bit. He is very hard to understand.
For sure.
There are some moments in the movie where he's very hard to understand. And I understand certain things about him. But they really should have made it so that you could really understand what he was saying. There must be a way to make that raspy voice sound without it sounding so raspy. However, he's a great villain. He's just a great villain for this because he's everything Batman is pretty much. But he's like they describe in the movie, like he's just pure darkness. Like it's like. He's never known what it is to be out in the sun, to know that sort of feeling.
Right.
And absolutely no fear whatsoever about anything. So, I mean, he's an amazing villain in that way. And I think he really pulls this movie off. Then, you realize the twist, of course, to it all near the end. And you're like, yeah. Oh, okay. You realize he's being guided. But I think, yeah, Tom Hardy did a really good job of trying to do as much as he could with this role, despite the fact that you can't see anyone's face. But you really got a good feeling exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, definitely after he has his big kind of climactic fight with Batman. And to me, staging-wise, had a huge, huge similarity to Return of the Jedi. And I'm sitting there in the theater, you know, after he's had one of the sort of respirator pipes knocked off his mask there, and he's leaning up against that brick wall, and Batman's down at him.
Yeah.
Looking at that, I'm like, holy man, that's the ramp in Return of the Jedi. But beyond that, you could definitely see in Tom Hardy's eyes, like a shift there for a second, like, you know, I'm dying here, right? Like,
yeah.
And you could see that moment, and that's tough for an actor to play where you can't basically give facial expression at all. I will agree with you wholeheartedly, though, very hard to understand.
Yeah, I wish there are some moments where I want to hear what he said a little better, but you know that's kind of that's one thing Christopher Nolan could have done better, I think. But as a whole, the villain as a whole was just a phenomenal villain to have,
and a much better treatment to the villain than the previous Bane.
Oh my, yes, because I don't know what Mr. Schumacher was thinking. But it's like Bane's a smart villain. I mean, and I remember when I he held Gotham City like ransom for like 3 years or like 2 years. This is not a minor villain. Like this is a guy who, you know, and what's interesting now is that he actually got in more recent comic books. He actually got turned into kind of almost an anti-hero. Almost okay. Like that. Yeah. Seriously. And he was part of a group. Yeah. He was part of a group called the Sinister Six. And Sinister Six? Oh no, is that Batman? Or that's Spider-Man. I'm sorry. I'll try to remember the comic name offhand. But yeah, he's pegged with a whole bunch of other villains who kind of take on different types of situations. Yeah, he's quite fascinating.
Kind of vigilantes.
Kind of, yeah.
You can see that bit of an opener in Bane's character that he could have gone that other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and definitely you see it with the tie-in with the Ra's al Ghul stuff. Near the end and all that.
Yeah.
There is a soft side there. And the one thing I will give them credit to, and from the opening with Bane's character and the whole scene on the plane, is they insinuate intelligence right from the start. And I don't know whether that comes from an accent or what it is, but they insinuate with Bane, his dialogue and all that, intelligence right from the start of the movie, that he's just not a muscle-bound idiot, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And he's got enough muscle, but he's also one of those villains who there's some scenes where he takes out his own henchmen. Mm-hmm. And you go, holy shit. You know, he's methodical, and he knows when a piece of his puzzle isn't working and he gets rid of it.
Right, yeah.
There's a methodical nature to that villain.
So let's look at a comparison here, and this is fun because we're quite off the kind of grid, but we're just talking about it, and it's great. Let's look at the comparison here of Bane versus the Joker.
Oh, it's interesting. The difference is, and I, and they both get their characters almost dead on. Bane is a very calculated villain. Like, there is, like, there's a sense of a pattern to him.
Right.
Where with the Joker, what's great about him is that there's no pattern. Like, right. There's nothing. It's pure, utter chaos.
Yeah.
And both actors played that very well. I mean, Heath Ledger was just brilliant. I mean, he was brilliant as a Joker. But it gets into a mindset. Yeah, he's just pure chaos. I mean, it's hard to compare the two because they just come from different worlds. Like, how would Joker have fared in a situation where being in that big pit? I don't know, you know, type of thing. It's, they come from different backgrounds, different origins and such. So, I mean, it's really hard to compare the two of them.
Right, yeah. I'm leaning, and this is where I lean back to Dark Knight, but in Dark Knight, I felt a stronger all around character in Heath Ledger's Joker as opposed, and that's not saying anything against Tom Hardy as Bane, which was, you know, a brilliant performance in itself. I did feel, though, if you took Bane out of this movie and replaced him with character X from the Batman lore,
yeah,
it still could have functioned. If you took Heath Ledger out of The Dark Knight, that movie doesn't happen to that extent.
But then you have to ask yourself, is that a credit to the actor or is that a disadvantage? I mean, that's one of my arguments against The Dark Knight, is that his villain is made so, he's just so out of this world almost, that he overwhelms the rest of the movie. Where Bane doesn't quite do that, but he's a fierce villain in this movie, and he creates just as much, you know, destruction as, and calculated destruction as the Joker did.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting thing, and you know, for people that are fans of the Batman series, and especially this Dark Knight series, you know, Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and then Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah,
we're treated, and even throwing in Ra's al Ghul there, we're treated to some phenomenal villains.
Well, there really are the best villains in the in Batman comic books we're talking about. I mean, Batman's got lots of villains, but they are really the best ones. The best things about Batman, pretty much for villains, and we've talked about this before, which is that they could have gone the other way. You know? And
right.
Joker is probably one of the very few ones that you don't really see going the other way. He's just chaos. That's all he is. And we're not really treated really much. I mean, we get a little bit of an origin in the very first Batman movie of the Tim Burton trilogy. Yeah. Or the Tim Burton quadrilogy or whatever it is.
Right.
But this in The Dark Knight, we don't really get that. And so it's, again, it's a character just pure out of chaos.
Right.
So
looking at another kind of secondary character in the movie, but not secondary by any means, is Anne Hathaway as Catwoman.
Boy, did everyone get her wrong. Like, you know, I remember when they announced her name and everyone just roared saying, no, she can't play that character. There's no way, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking to myself going, did any of you guys see Rachel getting married? Really? Did any of you see her in that movie? She played like an alcoholic sister.
Yeah.
Like, she's much better than we give her credit. Okay. Right. And this movie really showed that off. I mean, first of all, physically, she was doing things in that movie that were just phenomenal. Right. And I'm pretty sure she did most of those things, actually. I mean, some more acrobatic parts, maybe a bit out of her range.
Yeah.
But what I liked about her character was that she didn't try to replay Michelle Pfeiffer at all. She completely avoided that. And it's funny, she actually follows the comic books more like they are now than, like, Michelle Pfeiffer played it to a different perspective of kind of that the duality of two different lives, much like Batman and Bruce Wayne duality.
Right.
And Hathaway played it very much like the kind of fun-loving, like, cat burglar who suddenly gets a little bit of a conscience.
Right, yeah.
And I think it really worked well for Anne Hathaway. She was just a joy to watch in this movie. And she really – this movie could have been a very dark, dark, dark movie if she had not been there.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about her, if she were not in this movie, like, you'd have to rely on Joseph Gordon-Levitt to lighten you up a little bit. But she really was the humor of this movie. But she also provided an interesting perspective in the whole idea of, like, we know that she's not really a good person, but is she really a bad person under all this? And I think that's a great perspective to have in this movie.
And I'm very glad, actually, you know, with this movie that, you know, obviously she has a very physical element, but she wasn't basically an oversexed character. If like the Halle Berry Catwoman, right?
You know, oh, yeah. Like,
she was still a very powerful character. Like,
mm-hmm. And, I mean, they really went against making her into a sex symbol in this movie. Like, I think she's sexy on her own right, on its own, but right. They made her a very competent character, and that's a huge strength to this, to her, how Anne Hathaway took this role. I mean, I think she could have played it a lot more sexy, and it would have backfired.
Yeah,
Catwoman is a very, it's one of the strongest female characters in comic books. There's really not too many other characters like her in the comic books. Any character you see, like, you know, Black Widow that we saw in the Avengers, even like Black Canary, who we see in DC Comics sometimes, she's really the person that is really based off that is Catwoman, because she knows how to play the difference between sex and a brain too. She's a very smart character.
Right. Yeah. And she was, you know, she was basically a delight to watch, and her acting chops, you know, came through in that. And it was nice. It was a nice moment of kind of levity in a movie that, like you say, without her or Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, could be very, very dark. Cause you look at even this movie, people that were usually a bit of a moment of levity in the previous two, like Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine, both play darker characters in this movie.
Well, I think they're characters who are older characters who have been, you know, it's kind of, I can put this. It's the idea that as you get older, your sense of hope starts to go a little bit. And they really played on that a lot in this movie. They're like, here, Catwoman, or well, she wasn't, she's just called Selina in this movie. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, Blake, like, it's the idea of the youth being the people who bring hope.
Right.
However, and that all said, that, you know, the Morgan Freeman character and the Alfred character, they offer something else. They offer a supreme wisdom about all of this type thing, you know. And they really play that, and they don't, neither one of them makes the other one seem out of place.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, especially with Alfred's character, comes from a much, you know, this is the grittiest movie of the three, I believe, for Michael Caine. As far as the range of emotion.
Yeah, he's got some very emotional scenes this movie. I was really feeling for him most of this movie. And they're not necessarily the largest scenes in the movie, but they're so pivotal to how Batman's trajectory goes to this movie. They're very much the basis of his trajectory, of how his character's going to grow and fall.
Is Christian Bale the real deal in this movie, or is he held up by strong supporting characters like Gary Oldman, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine? How has his Batman evolved, or has Bruce Wayne evolved, or has it?
Well, I think it has. I mean, what's interesting is that in the first movie, we get his kind of youthful innocence towards being this character. The second one is all about, for him, I think, just, you know, remaining a figure in the city. The second movie is a really hard movie to place Christian Bale. I really find it hard. And it's because it's the Heath Ledger effect. Is that Heath Ledger's character is just so out there and so superly strong as a character that I think it dwarfed Christian Bale quite a bit out of that second movie. Where I feel it's great about this one was that I felt all the characters complemented each other.
Okay.
For instance, Catwoman brought a different level or different character out of Batman. That's the kind of that sexual energy that we didn't really see in the first two movies.
Right.
That playfulness that we need to kind of see from there, because there's the thing about Batman is that it is a man in a giant bat suit. It's not exactly the sanest thing in the world to comprehend. And I think Catwoman brought out that little bit of playfulness that we need from him. But the other characters, Bruce Wayne's making that transition between being the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character and the Alfred character in this. I think he's, at this point, he's now in that point of transitioning over to the other character. That point where I'm now the experienced person, but maybe I'm not exactly what everyone needs. that character. And I think he gets this really well in this movie. I feel like, even though it's a longer movie and there's a lot more characters, we still get a much better understanding of Bruce Wayne in this movie than we have in the other two. And I think that's an amazing feat to happen after like three movies.
Was there anything with Dark Knight Rises that you'd leave out?
What would I've left out? Definitely not the Scarecrow being reintroduced. That was fun.
Yeah.
The judge scenes were just. Yeah. I was killing myself laughing at those judge scenes.
Yeah.
What would I've left out if I had a chance? It's tricky. This movie is, for me, a very complete movie. Like it's one of those rare instances where I actually felt very complete. After I've seen the movie, there's very little I would have changed. There's not much I can say about this one. I remember coming out of this movie just absolutely beaming, going, "Yes, that's exactly the movie that should have happened." Okay. And there's very little I can say that I really didn't like, except for the fact that Bane's voice being hard to hear.
right. Yeah.
That's about it, really. I mean, yeah.
Here's a question of movie lore in general, and I've alluded to it a bit earlier. Is there a higher benchmark for the third movies in these trilogies? And like I had mentioned there, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion because I know you like some of the different ones too, but in my opinion, strongest Star Wars movie was Empire Strikes Back. Strongest Indiana Jones was definitely not Crystal Skull. It was Raiders of the Lost Ark. My favorite of the three Lord of the Rings was probably Two Towers. Is there a bit of a stigma attached to being the third movie? Are people's expectations higher? Or?
It's funny that you mentioned that because Crystal Skull actually was the fourth.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I don't even like to include Crystal Skull in the Indiana Jones lore. So. No,
that was one of the most. They should never have gone ahead of that movie. Like I don't know who thought that idea was good, but except for Kate Blanchett, she made that fun. But there is, because the third movie is the tying of loose ends. It's the bringing it all back together again. What's interesting that you mentioned about all those movies. I can't really comment on the Lord of the Rings because I'm one of those very horrible, horrible people who've actually never seen the complete trilogy of the Lord of the Rings.
Right. Okay.
I saw the first movie. I literally came out of the first movie, looked at my watch, and went, "Oh my god, I have another 6 hours of this to watch. No way." I couldn't do it.
And by proxy of the people I was living with at the time, that's why I've seen all three of them in their extended glory.
Thing. But I don't know. I mean, if we look at other other trilogies, I mean, yes, the Spider-Man movies, the second one was the best. The third one just got too much. Usually, the biggest fault of a third movie is that you add too many characters and you can't focus enough time on each of them.
Right.
But I don't feel like this one had that feeling. I felt like it focused on each character quite nicely, actually. And I felt like each character had lots of moments to shine. Now, with the Indiana Jones trilogy, that third movie was pretty brilliant.
Okay.
I liked the third movie in the Indiana Jones trilogy. I actually thought it was... I mean, don't remember, I haven't seen Raiders of the Lost Ark for a long time. Right. But, I mean, definitely the second one was not the best movie, that trilogy.
Right.
The Temple of Doom. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think it's the idea of the tying up of loose ends, but it's also the feeling that directors feel that they have to keep adding layers to this thing. And sometimes you add just enough layers in the second movie to make it. Now, I'm going to be pretty honest with the third Star Wars movie. I mean, I liked it a lot. But then I was really that age when I was really big into the Ewoks. So,
Yeah.
All the Ewoks. I had a stuffed like Ewok at home too. So I mean, I liked the third one. I thought it tied it up quite nicely, and I felt like it built on the story that they're trying to tell in the second one. I mean,
so you would agree never, though that sorry, you can never
end, you can never end that movie with the way the second one ended, right? Like, there's no way you could end it. Like right there. Right. Oh, look, it's got no hand. You know, yeah. Like you can't stop the movies there. You know, that's not going to happen. So, I mean, I think yes, Return of the Jedi was not made the perfect ending to that series, but it was a pretty good ending to how it all ended.
Right.
So,
would you agree then that the third movie is the most volatile?
It can be. Oh, very much so. The third movie can be the one where it's the one you kind of cross your fingers when you're going into and going, I hope this ends well. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing, because that's what you're asking. Because most times you never go past a fourth movie. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not a huge fan of the third Batman movie of the Tim Burton Schumacher series, right. But my God, they never should have gone to a fourth.
No. Kind of like Indiana Jones.
Exactly, same thing. But Indiana Jones, you know, I mean, the fourth Batman movie in that series was just a big mistake. Indiana Jones was an even bigger one because it's like way too late. Okay, it's like right. What was that? Like 15 years later? Like none of these characters can do what they're doing again. It's yeah. So I mean, the third movie is that one again. You're crossing your fingers. You're hoping it's gonna be okay and end well. And sometimes it does, but they're always ultimately going to disappoint us a little bit, because we always say it's like, you know how you watch a TV show and you watch it for 7 years and there's at the end of the seventh season, you want that great finale episode, and it doesn't quite happen the way you want it to end.
Seinfeld.
There's always something missing. But just by default, it's always going to miss something.
Right, yeah.
And so, I think that's what a lot of these third movies get that feeling.
As we're getting closer to the end here, I do have to ask you. You had mentioned earlier about a character that threw you for a loop in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And I'm gonna take a stab at it here and say, Marion Cotillard's character.
Yes. Oh my God. I you know. Okay. First of all, I'm not sure if you knew this. I had a huge hate on for Marion Cotillard many years ago.
Okay.
Because I really thought that Julie Christie should have won that Oscar for Away From Her.
Oh, I remember so you saying that. Yeah,
I was so mad at her, Mary. I'm like, who is this girl? And we'll never see her again. It'll be like Adrian Brody all over again, type thing. And over the years, she has steadily won me over. Inception, she was really good in the movie Nine. She was a huge standout in the movie Nine. And so this movie came along, and my hate on for Marion Cotillard ended, so that's good. But then this movie, I remember it came to that point, that pivotal point when they reveal who she is.
Right.
I think I swore out loud in a theater.
Yeah.
Like, I can't say it on the air now what I said, but I was just so mad at myself because I should have known who she was.
Right.
Should have known this. I should have picked this out. And because I know the comic books, I know how this goes. Yeah. And I should have gone. And I was so mad at myself. And I was so proud of the movie that it made me completely forget that.
There was a guy a couple of rows up in front of us when it come out who her character is. It was a son of a, you know, like you could audibly hear him in the theater. Just floored by that, and so good on Nolan's point and The Dark Knight Rises as a movie to conceal that so well.
Yeah, that's another thing. I think we need to give Christopher Nolan a lot of credit with this series and this movie especially. How much of this movie did you know going into what was going to happen?
Yeah, exactly.
You knew like some movies that you find out, you know everything about the freaking movie before you see it.
Yeah.
The trailer actually tells a story. This one, I was so surprised going through this movie at some of the scenes that it was mind boggling and it just impressed the hell out of me. So there's a swear word. but it impressed me so much how much he kept secret of this and how he kept me so engaged and he tricked me. darn him. And that made me feel so good. made me feel so good that he was able to do that.
And all, you know, kind of all our disagreements aside, as far as, you know, little blips that we've seen in the movies between yourself and myself and Dark Knight yeah. versus Dark Knight Rises, I think as a whole, as a single body of work, if you wrap the three of these together, possibly one of the best trilogies of all time.
Yeah, and it's one of those unassuming ones, because I remember when Batman Begins came out. And I think I hope this is what happens. I hope people go back and revisit that movie again and really see what he was starting to do in that movie.
Right.
You think about now, like, Batman Begins was not a huge success when it came out. We have to remember this. It was not a huge success. It was not necessarily a critical darling, as, you know, the second movie definitely was. And he did something really cool, is he really built this trilogy from the ground up. And he had to fight a really interesting quadrilogy of movies before. He had to fight out those horrible flops that happened there.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and what he did was he created a world that was purely his own to play with. It followed the comic books, but it was his world. And I think you're right. I think people are going to look at this movie and go, this is actually a really amazing trilogy, and we really should be respecting this movie. And we got to respect the fact, and this definitely, I'll give you props for the second movie. It's the first comic book movie to, A, get nominated for an Oscar, but to win an Oscar. Right. And that's pretty amazing on itself, too.
Do you fear with the potential at the end? And I know we talked about this at the opening with Christopher Nolan won't do it, but do you fear the potential of a fourth in this tangent, or do they start over? Like, do they reset again?
They're gonna reset again. I don't see Christopher Nolan. I mean, he's one of those directors who I don't, you know. He's pretty human, and he doesn't really want to keep doing the same movies over and over again. Like, even if you look at these three movies, even though they're the same characters, he really was concerned with the acting in these movies. As much as there's action in these movies, there's some phenomenal acting, and I think he's really has a lot more integrity. I don't think he's going to keep going the series. I think he knows he's done. He's figured out how to end the series, and it worked just fine. He's going to move on to different projects. He's going to move on to some very interesting things. He's done some interesting movies in the past. We know this. So, you know, I think this is it for Batman for him. Of course, it will never be over, because there's going to be Warner Brothers is going to hold on to this and do another movie in probably maybe like 5-6 years, maybe a time. They'll do another reboot.
Do you cast a new Batman at that point?
Definitely. Christian Bale won't do it again. And because Christian Bale, again, you know, there was a really great article in Entertainment Weekly when The Dark Knight Rises came out, and just about the relationship between him and Christopher Nolan, and how they understood each other, and they understand enough each other that they can't do this again without each other. Okay. I think, and he won't do it again. Also, you know, these comic book movies, you know, it's one of the reasons, you know, one of the reasons why we reboot these things, because Spider-Man is the same thing, is that these comic book movies do take a lot out of an actor. Tobey Maguire was so injured after doing all those Spider-Man movies, like,
yeah
it was hard for him.
It's pretty taxing.
It's pretty taxing, and so these movies, they have to reboot them after like 3 or 4 at the most, because the actors just start to get too old for the parts. So
Here's my question then, and we mentioned the spoiler earlier, and the Joseph yep. Gordon-Levitt character being spoiled as being Robin, or the potential of becoming Robin.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and this is just my opinion here, if they're talking about a reset on a franchise or a reboot on a franchise like we've talked, mm-hmm. they missed the boat by not going the route of him becoming Batman or Batman Beyond or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I honestly thought about that, and I thought it was cute they made him Robin. I kind of wish in some ways they had gone the Batman Beyond route, because I think that makes more sense. Because, I mean, we're very fortunate right now in the comic books, like the Robin characters have actually become their own characters. They could even made him Nightwing. That was an option too.
Right.
There's lots of other options. I wish they hadn't necessarily gone to Robin, because Robin has had a history of being on his own, but he's so linked to Batman, it's really hard to imagine him by himself. And so that was kind of, you know, something that, you know, maybe a little tweak on that would be nice. But I would have loved to see them go the Batman Beyond road. I think that would be interesting. But, oh well.
Maybe for the DVD box set, it's the alternate ending.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There'll be like the 8 endings that he really had going and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I'm Batman. I'm Nightwing.
It's all terribly dubbed lines in there, right?
Oh, be great.
Yeah.
But I can almost guarantee there's no shawarma scene in this movie.
Yeah. None will be had. Absolutely. Well, you know, it looks like we're at the end of our Batman, our look at The Dark Knight Rises here.
Yeah.
And it was fairly calm. I don't think there was a lot of disagreement in the sense.
No bloodshed. That's good.
No bloodshed. And I think we both just kind of looked at it a little differently in the sense of, you were a good convincer in wrapping The Dark Knight Rises into the whole series as opposed to being a standalone movie. So I will give you props to that, my friend.
I actually do believe a lot of the arguments you made for Dark, like there are some such brilliant parts of The Dark Knight. So I can totally understand your point as well too.
And on that note, once again, I thank you very much for joining me.
Before we go, though, you know, we should really be saying some stuff about your articles, right?
We should
tell the viewers about, you know, Sean here has been writing some articles for the Brandon Sun, right?
Yeah. I've picked up a kind of biweekly columnist gig with the Brandon Sun, and I'm really excited about that. It's just talking about, you know, some of the positive things that are going on in Brandon and just kind of my thoughts on where we see, you know, the city going and where we see some of the ideas going and positives and negatives, and hopefully providing some insight or whatever into it. So it's going to be exciting. It's a nice thing to be able to, first of all, have someone say, you know, they want to listen to what you have to say. And for somebody that's dabbled in politics, that's always a nice thing. And
I'm pretty sure that, you know, Brandon's not going to look like Gotham City by the end of this movie, right?
Well, we definitely hope not. I know some of the streets, some people would say, would look like Gotham City from the amount of potholes this year. But
and thankfully, you only got 2 bridges. So, yeah.
And here's hoping they keep standing.
There we go.
But yeah, no, thank you very much. It's an exciting time, and it'll be neat to share some neat ideas of you know, some of the good stuff that's happening in the city. So.
Right here.
Well, once again, I must say thank you very much for joining me, my friend.
No, thank you very much for having me again.
And we have been talking about The Dark Knight Rises, the third in the Batman series, being Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and then The Dark Knight Rises. I'm Sean Cameron. He was Steven Jackson. You can always check out our podcasts on whatsupwestman.ca, on iTunes by searching What's Up Westman, on Stitcher Radio by searching What's Up Westman, and as well on CJ 106.5 FM, where we're on bi-weekly for the summertime, and then we're going to get back into the regular swing of things come fall. Thank you very much for joining me. Hope to talk to you again real soon.